treasure chest neighboring the red and gold chest. "Those must be the counterfeit chests," he exclaimed, his words echoing through the vacant space. He continued to run, curious about why the other chests were placed so closely to the red and gold chest. After what seemed like a small eternity in Jacob's life, he finally arrived at the precious red and gold box. His lungs heaving, and with a slight trickle of sweat developing on his brow, he took a deep breath. There it was, the very chest that was supposed to contain immeasurable wealth. It was exquisite and much larger than Jacob had expected. It must have been at least 5 feet wide, 3 feet deep, and 5 feet tall. It had been crafted from a single piece of wood, and done so with tremendous skill and care. Yet another shining example of Patros's handiwork, Jacob thought. The only cuts in the wood were where the hinges were installed, to allow the top of the chest to open. On top of the chest was the same painting Jacob had seen on the door. It depicted the hero, overcoming challenges on his journey to arrive at a great treasure. The sides, front, and back of the chest had been painted the same red as the door, and the identical gold leaf painting style framed each of the visible panels that had been carved into the wood. Located on the front of the chest was a keyhole that looked just like the one on the red door that led to this strange room. Jacob stared at the chest, feeling that all of life's questions were about to be answered. He had this odd feeling that after years of working hard, serving others, and providing value to his customers, his employers, and his employees, and humankind in general, that it was all about to pay off. He felt like every good deed he'd ever done had somehow been responsible for laying those small gold tiles on the path that led him to this spot, in front of this chest at this moment. He paused, savoring the victory of what he perceived as a rival. "I did it! I've made it! I have the key! I'm going to unlock this chest, and I'll never have to work another day of my life! I'm about to become immeasurably wealthy!" He envisioned the volume of precious metals and jewels that must be waiting for him in that chest. More than his brain could fathom, he imagined. Oh, or maybe it was one massive diamond, bigger than the world had ever seen. What could it be? Jacob was almost blinded by the possibilities. His vision narrowed, and all he could see was this chest, his prize, and the key to becoming immeasurably wealthy. He stole a glance down at his feet and the golden tiles that lay below. He noticed that the gold tiles extended further out than he expected. The gold tiles widened to encompass all of the other 9 counterfeit chests that each had been placed on either side of his red and gold chest. The thoughts of the colossal diamond and unlimited gold left his mind, and confusion entered in their place. "How could this be?" he pondered aloud. "I thought the pathway was only supposed to lead me to my prize. How can the tiles also lead to these other chests?" In his excitement, he'd failed to notice that the tiled path had fanned out about 20 feet before he reached the chest. As he stared at the other golden paths, something else caught his eye. The chest on the far left, it was open. Even more fascinating, there was something glimmering inside. The chest stood of equal size and beauty to the red and gold chest, with its top unlocked and opened, leaving about a 3-inch gap. "Patros said I can only use the key on one chest, but I don't have to use the key on that one. It's already opened," he said. "Besides, it's located inside the gold path, so it must be fine to go take a peek." He glanced back at the red and gold chest and decided it wasn't going anywhere. Jacob followed the gold tiles right up to the open chest. He flung open the top and saw it was almost overflowing with gold and other precious things. "Wait, but didn't Patros say that what was in these chests was counterfeit? Didn't he say something like, 'Their contents will glitter, but beware, if you choose one of the 9 counterfeit chests, the treasure inside is nothing more than an echo of real wealth.'" Jacob turned it over in his mind. "None of this looks fake to me." He dove his hands into the chest to feel its contents. Jacob's hands did not enter easily as the gold coins were immensely heavy. He knew gold was supposed to be heavy, but how could he really tell if the contents were real? He picked up a beautifully minted gold coin and held the heavy round currency in his hand. Thanks to watching too many cartoons and pirate adventure movies, he bit into the coin, not sure what that was supposed to indicate. Didn't seem to give. Does that mean it's fake or real? I mean, gold's supposed to be soft, right? Well, not necessarily, Jacob thought. He'd recently been researching whether or not to invest some money in gold, and he read that gold coins with as much as 0.9999 purity might be mixed with an alloy so that they weren't too soft. Thus, the lack of give didn't necessarily mean it wasn't real gold. There was no taste to it. It didn't have that metallic hint you get if you've ever been dumb enough to put a penny in your mouth. So maybe that meant it was real? He picked up a gold bar, maybe 7 inches long. It was heavy, perhaps 10 or 20 pounds. Gold is heavy, he thought. This sure does seem real. He remembered hearing once that real gold would be stamped with an indicator of its purity. He turned it over in his hands, and on the bottom was a small stamp that said 24K. Okay, so the coin felt like a gold coin, and it looked like a real gold coin. And then there was the bar. The bar was heavy. It looked like a real gold bar, and it had the stamp, too. He began to think that it must be real gold. He turned his attention to the diamonds. He picked up one of the large diamonds and pretended to examine it, as if he knew what he was looking for. He'd read somewhere that if you try to fog a diamond with your breath, like you would a mirror, that a real diamond quickly disperses the heat and doesn't stay fogged. He blew his warm breath onto the surface, and the fog dispersed almost immediately. This was real. It was all real. All of this treasure was real. It had to be. Jacob again grew confused. If the other 9 chests are full of this kind of treasure, what could his red and gold chest possibly be filled with? He started to head back to the red and gold chest, but as he took a step, almost like he triggered it, the other 8 chests sprung open to reveal their equally impressive and dazzling contents. Each of them was also squarely sitting along the gold-tiled path. Jacob performed a few quick tests on the diamond and gold in the other chests. All of it appeared to be real. How could the contents of the red and gold chest be worth more than what was already in front of him? All the chests were open and available. Couldn't he take the contents of each one? I mean, even a handful or two would surely be worth millions of dollars. He looked down at the key in his hand. He glanced at the red and gold chest at the end of the golden tiled path. He gazed upon the precious metals and stones in the counterfeit boxes. He started to wonder if this was part of the game. Was he actually supposed to pick the other 9 chests? Were those the real prize? Maybe Patros intentionally left out some vital piece of information, like he did with the light switch, in order to impart some sort of lesson. Jacob began to talk out loud. At a minimum, I know Patros wants me to succeed, and he wouldn't lie to me just for a game, would he? So there has to be a reason for all this, but then again, where were all of those pitfalls and potential harm that Patros warned me about? Jacob looked around the massive room and couldn't see anything harmful or even slightly ominous. He again thought of the words of Patros. Located in the room are tremendous perils and danger. You will want to take care to avoid these. Had he ever explicitly said there would be a booby trap or sharp spikes? No, he didn't. He'd said things like, in this room there will be many ways to injure yourself and cause yourself harm. Jacob realized that he had let his imagination run wild. Those words didn't have to mean there'd be alligator pits or blades swinging from the ceiling. Jacob began to comprehend Patros's game. Everything Patros said had a purpose, but it didn't mean the words were literal. Jacob thought, he did say something about being at the bottom of some pit or falling off a cliff, but what if he meant that metaphorically? Something inside Jacob stirred. He knew he was missing something. He turned his attention back to the chests and again found himself replaying the words of Patros. Located somewhere inside the room is a treasure chest full of immeasurable wealth, okay? In the chest is more wealth than you can ever spend in a lifetime, and frankly more than your children after you could spend in their lifetime. Jacob looked at the chest full of precious things and thought again, you know, that's a lot of money. But between my children and I mean, if we were reckless, I'm certain we could spend it all. Plus, how could these 9 chests be immeasurable wealth? I could get the contents appraised and know exactly how much I had. A thought occurred to Jacob. Wait a second. Maybe these chests are the peril. They're on the path, but maybe that's because I'm supposed to encounter them and choose to avoid them or something. What if their treasure is cursed? What if choosing these chests dooms me to some wretched existence? It was all beginning to click. Again, the words of Patros reverberated through his head. He felt like he was onto something. In the chest is more wealth than you can ever spend in a lifetime. Patros said chest, singular. That means it can't be these nine, or he would have said chests, plural. If anything, Patros was certainly deliberate in his language, and Jacob had the feeling that every word Patros uttered had been laced with specific purpose and meaning, but his young mind could not possibly understand its full meaning, at least not yet. One chest, immeasurable wealth. It had to be the red and gold chest. He approached the red and gold chest once again. The time had come. He inserted the key Patros had given him and lifted the heavy lid, swinging it backwards to give him access to the chamber within. The inside of the chest was shadowed. In fact, he could catch no glimpse of any treasure whatsoever. It appeared to be empty. He stuck his head in the chest, trying to figure out what was missing. Was there another step? Was this some sort of elaborate scavenger hunt, and this was just the first of the clues? Patros said the chest contained immeasurable wealth, so where is it? Jacob plunged his head further into the box and saw nothing. He reached a hand inside and began running it along the sides of the chest and moving his hand back and forth inside the chest through the air, hoping that his hand would hit something. He began frantically swabbing the inside of the chest with his hand, reaching further down with each swab. Then his finger touched something. What was that? He leaned further into the chest, and his heels came off the ground, his toes the only thing still anchoring him. He still could not reach the bottom, so he gave in and let his feet detach from the ground. As his waist teetered on the edge of the chest, he reached as far as he could, and then, there, he could reach it. He picked up the small roll of parchment between his thumb and forefinger and pulled it upward. Shifting his weight back to his feet, he stood straight up. He held a small piece of rolled parchment that was tied with a golden string. Jacob delicately untied the string and unrolled the parchment. The parchment felt so old that Jacob was worried it would fall apart. His eyes scanned a letter that seemed quite long. He carefully scanned down to the final paragraph, and just below it was a beautifully signed name at the very bottom. This was a personalized letter to Jacob from Patros. Jacob snapped his head back towards the door. Patros, are you in here? What is this? His voice echoed and bounced off the concrete walls surrounding him, and then the sound waves diminished in intensity, and Jacob's echo disappeared. He was alone. Chapter 4, The Letter. Settling back into his solitude amidst the expanse of the room, his eyes became fixed on the beautiful handwriting of Patros, and he began to read the letter.
My dearest Jacob, if you are reading this, it means you flipped the light switch to illuminate your task, thought carefully about my words, chose not to take what was offered in the other chests, and opted instead to find the immeasurable wealth promised in this one. Congratulations, my boy. You have completed your task. You may be wondering how this chest can possibly contain immeasurable wealth when all that is here is this letter. All will be made clear soon enough, because in this letter you will find the world's most powerful truth, and quite possibly its best kept secret. But before I share the secret, I want to explain why I didn't give this letter to you when we first met on the street. If I'd simply handed you this information, it would have been too easy to forget. It means far more to learn from experience than from words, and even more to learn from application. By creating this room and a series of tasks for you, once you receive this truth, you will never forget it. Resolve now to take this secret and act on it, and the wealth you receive can never be fully spent, extinguished, or forgotten. Jacob, you have a great work to do. You have been called to bless the human family and reveal this secret to as many of them as possible. As you teach this secret, earthly riches will be yours, but more importantly, the wisdom of the ages will be unlocked, and you will have limitless wealth in mind and spirit. What you can come to possess as a result will dwarf what is contained in the 9 other chests. The chests of gold and jewels can buy you a measure of happiness in this world, but none of it is transferable when you leave the earth. The secret contained within this letter will make you immeasurably wealthy on this earth and in the next phase of your existence, the bounds of which are limitless and cannot be measured by earthly reckoning. I want you to be committed to your success, but with the simple understanding that your success is inextricably intertwined with how abundantly you place other people's interests before your own. That is why you must have a singular focus on sharing this secret once it is revealed. More importantly, live this secret and allow it to take up residence in your soul. Breathe it in and let it fuel your life. My son, while the key to immeasurable wealth is now in your hands, the secret is meaningless if you don't understand the conditions in which the immeasurable wealth must be obtained, and if you don't understand the importance of it. This entire experience is meant to serve as a metaphor for your life, and you should share this metaphor as part of your life's work to reveal the secret to all who will listen. This room is a symbol for your life. You are in the room just as you are in life at this moment. You were tasked to successfully navigate the room while looking for something that will satisfy the need to find what you have probably perceived as physical treasure. Just as in life, many people spend most of their time seeking that thing they believe will satisfy. Some find it. Far too many do not. Each person has a specific set of abilities and a unique gift. Yet so many of them seek to find some new gift while rarely acknowledging the one they've already been given. This adventure was designed to help you see the gift you were already given, a gift that was given from the moment you came into this world, which is simply this. You have the exclusive power to choose to make yourself happy. Next to the bestowal of life itself, the right to direct your life is one of the greatest gifts you will ever receive. No earthly treasure can fulfill the way this eternal one can. Now, if I had offered you the opportunity to enter the room as a way to find happiness, how quickly would you have dismissed my offer or considered it a hoax? However, by offering an adventure and the promise of a treasure hunt, how much more likely was an adventurous and daring soul like yours to accept my offer? You chose adventure, and now I will reveal the treasure at the end of your quest. Here it is. Immeasurable wealth, in this life and in the life to come, is true happiness. But there is more to understand, so much more. Just as this room is a symbol for your life, every piece of your experience this evening is also a symbol for something you have encountered or will encounter in what can be a dark and dreary world. The golden tiles are symbols for the choices you make. If you are constantly living your life based on solid, truth-driven principles, those good choices compound and form a path that lead you to genuine and everlasting happiness. Being kind, caring for those in need, working hard, loving your family, serving others, and having humility are just a few of the decisions you have made that have created the path you now stand on, the path that has guided you to the ultimate treasure. The 9 chests are symbols for temporary happiness. Outside this room, even as you walk the golden tiled path of your real life by sticking to the principles you know to be true and right, you will still encounter counterfeit happiness. This is inevitable. No matter how righteous you attempt to be, counterfeit happiness is always no more than a step away, and it will always appear to be instantly accessible and glistening with the shiny promise of a better life. True happiness, however, is the kind that keeps you afloat no matter how hard the storms of life try to drown you. True happiness is the kind that fulfills you and allows you to be rich in contentment. Temporary or counterfeit happiness is the kind that will never fully satisfy, and it will lead to a life of suffering from the poverty of endless discontentment. Counterfeit happiness comes in many forms. It can be represented by alcohol, drugs, promiscuity, immediate gratification, greed, fame, and abundance of unhealthy, rich food, and much more. Such things represent a form of pleasure to many, but none of them have the ability to create authentic, lasting happiness. When counterfeit happiness passes through the system, it leaves a hole that needs to be filled by more of the things that will leave you even emptier than before, and destroy you in the end. It has been said that anything worth having is worth working for, and yet the world betrays this adage with an endless array of ways to immediately experience some morsel of fleeting happiness. True happiness, eternal, perfect happiness, must be won and earned. It must be purchased with time and with dedication. It cannot be temporarily leased. Think of how many people have spent a lifetime trying to attain a small portion of what is in any one of those 9 chests you forfeited. And yet no matter how much money they have, they constantly live with the fear that what they have isn't enough. The more happiness they seek through acquiring fame and fortune, the more it escapes through their fingers like smoke. That is why the 9 chests were found along the path, to remind you that while your path may be true, you will always be met with choices that can lead to destruction. You must be vigilant and use the path you are on only to obtain real, fulfilling wealth and happiness. The cliffs and pitfalls I spoke of are symbols for the hardships of life. I'm sure you noticed that there were no physical dangers visible in the room. That is because you can meet your demise in this room without the presence of a snake pit or a rocky cliff. What if you chose to stray from the golden path and spend the remainder of your days wandering the room's expanse, constantly muttering about your lack, never choosing to see what is actually in front of you? What if you decided the game was rigged and you were doomed to failure? You are welcome to leave this room with or without your treasure. You are welcome to wander and express discontent for the rest of your days. You are even welcome to take up your treasure and keep it to yourself, selfishly hoarding what could be shared with the world. Each outcome is possible, and each one is rooted in that precious gift you have, the gift of choice. Many people will wander the room of life with no clear picture of purpose or possibility. It would feel as though you were wandering this room in the dark, always searching, never finding. What would the mind do if it felt it had no options and no way to succeed? Would that not lead to assured destruction? A series of poor choices can become deep chasms from which you may not be able to escape. All of them lead to assured destruction, and all of them prevent you from experiencing the fulfillment you seek. The pits and the cliffs of life are the hardships, the difficulties, the tragedies, the failures, and the storms that inevitably will rage. Life's pitfalls are always present, even while on the path. But while you are always faced with their reality, you are never required to give in to their tricks or let them defeat you. You are not required to stray from the path. Straying is a choice. You are not required to let life's pitfalls destroy you. You choose to give them power. You will be constantly assaulted by the world's many difficulties and trials. Should you choose to submit, you will never find the immeasurable wealth you seek. You have the gift of choice. You may choose to aimlessly wander to your detriment and destruction. You may choose to take up the earthly treasure and wander with it in your grasp, but never able to use it. Or you may choose the path I've provided, a path that will also serve as your guide out of this room and back into the world where you can use the power of choice and share the immeasurable wealth, thus multiplying your gifts. The key I gave you is a symbol for knowledge. It is something that can be obtained, but will be useless if not applied and used in the right way. You knew the red and gold chest contained immeasurable wealth, but you had to choose to use that knowledge as you chose to use the key to unlock it. And now, my boy, we have come to the singular, central principle of this entire event. And that is the light, and how you accessed it. The light that you need to illuminate the path. The light that shines on the red and gold chest. The light that can illuminate the pitfalls and the counterfeit treasure. What does this light represent? When you thought you would have to navigate the room in the dark, you felt the absence of light even before you attempted the task. You likely, in equal measure, felt the desire to have the light. You didn't know how to introduce light into the room, but you knew that without the light, the task was impossible. With the light, however, the task became feasible. With the light on, you felt certain you could succeed. What would it be like to always feel that we had light available to us in unlimited supply? What would it feel like to know that the accessible light would allow us to successfully navigate any challenge or task? Whereas in the darkness, those same challenges and tasks may seem impossible. Jacob, you already possess the light in your life. The light that will illuminate your life is gratitude. Gratitude is the only thing that can lead you to unlimited and unrestrained happiness and thus immeasurable wealth. Here is how it all connects. Without light, only darkness remains, and darkness is fear. If only fear is present, there can be no hope. If there is no hope, there is only despair. If there is only despair, there can be no purpose. Without purpose, there is no meaning. Without meaning, there is no life. Happiness, then, is the meaning of life. And a life full of meaning enjoys the blessing of eternal existence. The purpose of eternal existence is to have unlimited joy. Joy only comes through being rich in contentment. And finally, contentment is only found through the eternal power of gratitude. The existence of gratitude will constantly illuminate life and all of its challenges, pitfalls, and failures, as well as its joys and triumphs. Not only will gratitude allow that which is beautiful to become more beautiful, but the power of gratitude will also illuminate each of life's challenges and allow you to see the beauty in them. There is success embedded in every failure. Without gratitude, failure is nothing more than disappointment. There is joy embedded in despair. Without gratitude, despair is nothing more than a hole left unfilled. There is hope embedded in tragedy. Without gratitude, tragedy is nothing more than loss of hope. There is healing embedded in pain. Without gratitude, pain is simply unnecessary. There is a new beginning embedded in every ending. Without gratitude, endings are always final. This is the immeasurable wealth you have now come to possess, and that you are now charged to share with the world. But before you can begin receiving the eternal wealth of this knowledge and your earthly rewards as well, there is one final, integral component that you must understand. How did you access the light? What is the simple thing you did in order to receive the very light that is currently allowing you to access the eternal truths you are now reading? It was your decision to turn on the light. You chose to flip the switch. The simple act of flipping that switch is the key to it all. Even after I told you there was a way to have light in the room, you still had to choose to flip the switch. Most people don't ask the right question as you did, and they go through life unaware that the switch that will reveal their path is but an arm's reach away. Even more tragically, others are aware of this simple truth, but choose not to flip the switch. You were aware of the switch's existence, but it still required some level of faith in my words that flipping the switch would be the answer. But even faith in my words wasn't enough. What it took in the end was the conscious action. I could have told you of the switch before you questioned me. I could have told you that by simply flipping it, you could access all the light necessary to complete your task. But even if you believed me, had you not made the conscious decision to flip the switch, you never would have been given access to the light. In this room, it was the simple act of flipping the switch that made everything possible. The light allows you to navigate every pitfall, illuminate the path, obtain the key, find the treasure, and significantly improve your chances for success. Without light, the task of finding immeasurable wealth is impossible. You are now aware that the power of gratitude will illuminate all of life's challenges and allow you to successfully navigate anything that may come your way. But that light will be unavailable to you if you don't make the mindful daily decision to flip your gratitude switch. Flipping your gratitude switch is what is required in order to access the light. Think of the flipping of the switch as the simple act of choosing to consciously express, feel, and experience gratitude no matter what life may throw at you. You must flip your gratitude switch daily, hourly, even by the minute if necessary. When you leave this room, the weight of the world and its darkness will once again rest upon you. Out there, few people know that the key to happiness, peace, and fulfillment is within them. They do not know that a daily choice to flip an internal switch is the key to unlimited happiness. That is why you must tell them. If they do not know about the switch, they will continue to wander through the darkness of life, searching for some kind of light. They may stumble upon and access the counterfeit treasures, those things that bring temporary happiness. But until they know they already have permanent access to the light, they may never have true happiness. They may access the light from time to time, but if it cannot be consistent, then neither shall their joy and contentment in this life be sustained. The true dangers of this life lie waiting for you in the seemingly insignificant but constant moments of trial and tribulation. The danger lies in the curious child that writes on your wall and you feel the urge to yell. There is great risk in the moment when your coworker is rude and you desire to be rude back. There is peril in the instance when you lock yourself out of your house and want to place the blame at someone else's feet. Your happiness can be threatened in the moment you believe that a payment for services rendered is not enough and you desire to communicate this mistreatment to anyone who will listen. It is in the outwardly insignificant moments that the power and choice to flip the gratitude switch becomes the most crucial. If you can consistently flip the switch in the small moments of life's difficulties, how much more likely will you be to flip it in life's big moments of despair, hurt, tragedy, and loss? Before you leave this room, I must give you a final, dire warning. If you do not share this with others, you may find yourself forgetting these simple truths and abandoning the use of your gratitude switch. This knowledge is much like earthly riches. If you do not properly use this knowledge, it will eventually be lost. But if you put it to work and use it wisely, then it will multiply its net effect on your world and the world around you. This will not be an easy task. Life has conditioned you to complain. The adversary would have you believe that the most comfortable place to reside is in a perpetual state of passing the buck and not being held accountable for your life, your results, your finances, your relationships, your success, and ultimately, your own happiness. Do not give in to the common practices of placing blame and engaging in self-victimization. You now understand that the infinite power of gratitude can banish negativity, obliterate the constant feeling of victimhood, and deliver the sweet, blessed state of perpetual bliss. The key to infinite and unrestrained happiness is in the consistent, conscious application of gratitude. If you flip the gratitude switch during life's difficult circumstances, no matter how big or how small, you will change your life. By sharing this knowledge, you will change the world. Now go forward and spread the word, my boy. Stand here no more. Take up your banner and go. With the eternal gratitude and love of a father, Patros.
Chapter 5. Back to the Real World. After he finished, Jacob stood and, with a reverence usually reserved for a religious text, carefully rolled the note back up and tenderly placed the string that had bound it. He took the note and clutched it to his heart. How had he never known these things before? How could he have spent a lifetime seeking joy and fulfillment and never known that the secret to limitless happiness was found in a simple, conscious choice? Jacob was overwhelmed by the possibility of it all. He had just been delivered his life's mission and the single most valuable thing he could ask for, the key to infinite joy. Patros had told him that success in the task would be marked by his attainment of immeasurable wealth, and somehow, now that he'd received it, that description seemed too simple, too diminutive. This knowledge was so much more. This knowledge could heal the world. Jacob knew that he held the answers to so many of life's questions rolled up in his hands, and he felt an exhilarating mantle of responsibility come to rest upon his shoulders. He had to share this with everyone. He turned around, forgetting the treasure in the 9 counterfeit chests. All of those glittery earthly materials were so elementary now. He gazed back across the room with only one thought in his mind. He wanted to burst through that door and set about fulfilling his mission with a full awareness of the importance and rewards of doing that very thing. He delicately removed the key Patros had given him from the red and gold chest and placed it in his pocket before deciding that a pocket didn't seem like the right place to store such an integral item. He wanted it visible to serve as a reminder of what it had just unlocked. He took the loop of the small chain that had been holding the key around Patros' neck and ran it through one of his belt loops in the front of his slacks. He wound it through a few more times to shorten the chain, passed the key through one of the chain loops he'd created, and let the key securely dangle in front of his pocket. He clutched the note in his right hand, firmly enough that there was no risk of it slipping out, but carefully enough that it would not get crumpled or ruined. He began running down the golden tiled path again, but this time he was using the path to lead him to the rest of his life. He reached the door, flipped the switch off, and shut the door behind him. It had been raining again. There were puddles littering the sidewalks and potholes on the solitary street. How long had he been in that room? It seemed like hours, or was it minutes? It felt like dawn was just over the horizon. The night had that quality of the early morning, quiet but with a noticeable energy in the air. It did not feel like the conclusion of one day. It felt like the beginning of the next. Jacob stood in front of the red and gold door and remembered the wrinkled, peculiar old man who greeted him there that evening. Where was Patros now? Was he watching Jacob as he said he had done in the past? Feeling Patros's attentive eyes from afar felt comforting, and Jacob was filled with the hope of what would be and what was to come. He swiveled his head to the right and left. Which way had he come? It didn't matter. What mattered is which way he'd choose to go. That first step in either direction was the first step of the rest of his life. He turned right and began walking with intense strides, hoping to meet someone, anyone with whom he could share his newfound wealth. Jacob had only taken 3 steps when, splash! He stepped right into a deceptively deep and dirty puddle in the sidewalk. His intense step had landed with tremendous force, displacing what seemed like a gallon of water that splashed up nearly 3 feet. He felt the dirty water seep into his expensive shoes and soak through his socks. He had another sensation of cold water seeping down the entire front of his light-colored slacks. "No, you got to be kidding me!" He suddenly felt cold as he stood there, dripping wet, trying to take in what had just happened. He said aloud to no one, "Oh, come on, did that really just happen? After all that I just read and experienced, I ruined the only pair of shoes I brought on this trip as I'm walking to go help people, and now my pants are stained with the disgusting mud from a disgusting puddle on some ridiculous sidewalk that the city and its stupid bureaucracy can't seem to fix. Way to find another way to waste taxpayer dollars." As he grunted his last syllable, there was a flash of lightning and a crack of thunder. As if someone had just turned on the shower, it began to pour down rain all over Jacob, all over his note, and all over his enthusiasm for the evening. Jacob couldn't believe his bad luck. The city had hardly received any rainfall that year. Why did it have to decide to come all at once tonight? He looked around again, desperately seeking shelter. Where was he anyway? He wasn't even sure if his hotel was close. Jacob had a meeting in what he felt was just a few short hours away. He pulled out his cell phone to check on the time. It was waterlogged, and the screen was blinking on and off like a fluorescent light flickering in its final swan song. He glanced at his watch. This part of the street had no streetlights, making it too dark to read the time. He suddenly noticed how tired and hungry he was. He paused to take inventory. Totally soaked, completely downtrodden, lost in the city, ruined clothes, damaged phone, tired, hunger pangs, no taxi in sight, no idea what direction to walk, gonna be late and wet to the meeting, and all of it because of Patros, his key, his note, and this street. Jacob almost squeezed the soggy note in his hand in annoyance as he grumbled loudly and yelled to the sky, as though the clouds were some conduit to the world's concierge desk. "Can I please catch a break here?" He glanced down at his watch and phone again. Nothing. What could he do? The store windows were dark, the heavy rain had stifled the smell of incense, the street felt empty and hopeless. Jacob hoped that a car or truck would drive by just so the headlights would shine a light on his sorry situation and illuminate just how bad the damage was. He just needed some sort of light. Like an anvil in the head, a thought hit Jacob. The room, the door, the light switch. Chapter 6. Lessons Learned. He still had Patros's key hanging on his pants, the key that would let him back inside the treasure room. He entwined the key from his belt loop and turned back toward the door. There it was in all its beauty. He grabbed the key, inserted it, and turned it with a loud click. The door swung open, once again revealing the expanse within. He tucked the key into his back pocket in a single movement. There he stood once more in front of the room that had held so much joy and intrigue for him just minutes before. The streetlights had since been turned off, so he could not see the start of the golden tiles like he had earlier. He reached inside and flipped the switch. The room flooded with light for the second time that evening. There, in the center of the room, was his chest and the others. He looked down at the slightly crumpled, wet note in his hand. This note that had been so precious just minutes ago felt like nothing more than a piece of paper as Jacob stood, wet, hungry, and cold in the dark. But now, in the light and warmth of the room, he unrolled the note again. Luckily, It was all still there. There were a few smears, but all of the text was readable. His eyes darted back to a passage.
The key I gave you is a symbol for knowledge. It is something that can be obtained, but will be useless if not applied and used in the right way. You knew the red and gold chest contained immeasurable wealth, but you had to choose to use that knowledge as you chose to use the key to unlock it.
Jacob looked down at his wet, dirty pants. There, on the outside of his light-colored slacks, his pocket was wet and dirty, except in one place. There was a completely dry and clean key-shaped spot on his pocket. His startled movements must have pressed the heavy key firmly against his leg, leaving no opportunity for the dirt to reach the part of his pants that was shielded by the key. The surrounding splatter made the outline of the key appear like a small, light beige symbol of hope in the midst of the chaotic splatter of filth. The key, it had unlocked everything. It had unlocked the room in the chest, and now it had given him the ability to re-enter this room and be reminded of all that he had experienced just moments ago. The key represented knowledge, knowledge that Jacob now chose to use. He glanced again at the light switch. He flipped it off and then back on. And again, the darkness disappeared and the room was instantly flooded with the light. The gratitude switch, he thought. How unbelievably simple. He looked down at his watch that could now be easily seen in the light of the room. It wasn't nearly as late as he thought. He had plenty of time to get back, eat, shower, and get some rest before his big meeting. Just then, he remembered the card in his left pocket that the cab driver who picked him up from the airport had given him. It was a little soggy, but the phone number was legible. He grabbed his phone, took out the battery, blew it off, and inserted it again. The phone powered up, and he called the number. The driver remembered him, and even remembered his hotel. The driver was also familiar with the neighborhood Jacob had wandered into, and knew exactly where Patros's red and gold door was located. He was on his way. Jacob looked down at the outline of the key again. He gazed at the red and gold chest in the distance. He glanced at the note still in his hand. He fixed his eyes on the light switch that had made it possible for him to see the taxi driver's card and get his phone working again. That simple flip of the switch really did make all the difference. He read another passage of the note.
In this room, it was the simple act of flipping the switch that made everything possible. The light allows you to navigate every pitfall, illuminate the path, obtain the key, find the treasure, and significantly improve your chances for success. You are now aware that the power of gratitude will illuminate all of life's challenges and allow you to successfully navigate anything that may come your way. But that light will be unavailable to you if you don't make the mindful, daily decision to flip your gratitude switch in order to access the light. Think of the flipping of the switch as the simple act of choosing to consciously express, feel, and experience gratitude no matter what life may throw at you.
Jacob exhaled slowly, as if blowing out the air of frustration that took up residence inside him after he stepped in the puddle. In that moment, he consciously chose to flip the gratitude switch and find everything in his immediate situation he could be thankful for. He looked down at his pants. Oh, I'm so thankful that I brought other clothes with me for my meeting. He looked at his phone. I'm really glad they make phones durable enough to withstand a little water. Besides, even if it hadn't worked, I can just go to the store tomorrow and get another one. What an incredible world of technology and convenience we live in. He glanced down at his shoes. I sure am glad I listened to that salesperson and invested in good footwear. These shoes look like they're perfectly fine. They just need to dry a little. He looked at the taxi driver's card. Oh, I'm grateful this driver gave me his card. What a lesson in marketing. In fact, you know what? That reminds me. I need to reorder my business cards. Hey, maybe I can put one of Patros's quotes on there so everyone who has a card can read a few words of the wisdom I learned here tonight. He took a deep breath. I'm alive. What a blessing. What a night. What a lesson. He then gazed at the ceiling, as if trying to carry his voice past its beams and shingles so that it may find Patros wherever he may be.
"I get it, Patros. I understand. I just have to flip the switch and all will be well."
He felt a rush of gratitude for Patros, for the evening, for this room, and for life. He felt those lingering wisps of frustration melt away, and now it was Jacob whose smile wrinkles seemed to deepen just as the taxi driver pulled up outside. Jacob peered down at the last lines in the note.
"By sharing this knowledge, you will change the world. Now go forward and spread the word, my boy. Stand here no more. Take up your banner and go."
Jacob went, knowing exactly what he was going to talk to the taxi driver about on the way back to the hotel. Part 2, Flipping Foundations, Chapter 1, A Tale of Two Men. This is a story of two men living similar yet different lives. In this brief tale, you will see the problem we as the human family are currently facing, and you will begin to gain insight to the simple tool that will change your world and the world around you. The story may be about two men, but you will probably see yourself in both of these individuals. And whether you are a man or a woman, one of their stories may likely be your story. It was the best of times for one man. It was the worst of times for another. Two alarms go off on a Monday morning at 6:30 a.m. Man number one opens his eyes to greet the day in his gorgeous five-bedroom home, the perfect size for his growing children and beautiful wife. As man number two hears the alarm, he opens his eyes to glare at the water stain on the ceiling above his head as he mumbles about how his aging three-bedroom house is only good for draining his bank account. Rubbing the sleep from his eyes, man number one lays still for a moment and feels his heart beating, takes a deep breath, and marvels at how great he feels after a good night's rest. Man number two runs his hands down to his belly and all of its excess pounds that he wishes would somehow magically fall off. But who has time to work out? Both men know it's time to get up. Man number one takes another deep breath and feels a rush of excitement about the start of a new day that is full of untold potential. Sometimes it's hard to separate his dreams from reality since he has his dream job, lives in his dream home, and is married to his dream wife. Man number two takes another deep breath, more like a sigh, and feels the string of regret from staying up too late watching reality TV. "Great," he thinks. "Now I'll be useless all day." He pauses, dreading to put his feet on the ground and spend another day working at a thankless job, going nowhere, being underpaid, and despising his boss. If only he had time to find a better job. Man number one swings his legs out of bed as two words of prayer quietly cross his lips so as to not wake his wife. "Thank you." He glances over at the love of his life and feels a rush of gratefulness for how she selflessly stays at home to care for the children. He's thankful he hasn't woken her. She deserves the extra rest, since her job is exponentially harder than his. Man number two reluctantly swings his legs out of bed, saying aloud, "Geez, I'm tired," hoping to make as much noise as possible to remind his wife that he's the one that has to go to work while she gets to stay home and only take care of the kids. He hopes she realizes how lucky she is that she doesn't have to go out and get a real job. He looks at her with a mixture of envy and resentment and thinks, "Oh, no, please don't get up. I'm sure you need all the rest you can get." Both men leave their bedrooms and head down the hall. Man number one does some jumping jacks, some push-ups, and crunches before sitting down at the kitchen table to study the scriptures. He reads, carefully looking for the lesson he knows he will inevitably learn from his studies. He kneels, utters a prayer of gratitude, and pleads for a productive and powerful day. He relishes the opportunity to connect with God daily. Man number two slumps to his knees with his hands clasped together and goes through the motions of prayer. He knows he's supposed to be religious, so he utters an all too common series of robotic phrases, hurriedly trying to complete the ritual so he can check it off his list. After his satisfying prayer, man number one takes 10 minutes to meditate and clear his mind. He then pulls out a book on personal development and begins reading. He loves to fill his head with thoughts of success in the morning. He looks at his vision board and feels the fulfillment of achieving so many of the items. He reads the affirmations he's written and writes down a few words in his journal. After his empty prayer, man number two plops down on the couch and reaches for the remote. He's already fed up with the day and thinks that 10 minutes of sports highlights might put him in a better mood. Then he thinks, a few more minutes of shut-eye can't hurt. I was up late. I deserve it. He falls back asleep. A 10-minute nap turns into a 30-minute snooze. He abruptly awakens and feels stress wash over him. Oh, great. Now I'm going to be late. Both men make their way to the bathroom and turn on the shower. Man number one hops in and feels a rush of excitement as the warm water splashes over his head. He knows that some of his most inspired ideas come to him in the shower. He bends down and picks up a few of the kids' toys off the bathtub floor. As he puts them away, he smiles at the thought of those gorgeous, funny kids and the bath games he played with them just the night before. Man number two steps into the lukewarm shower, grumbling about the stupid water heater needing to be replaced. He plops down on the bathtub floor and feels the acute pain of a bath toy digging into his backside. Oh, why can't the kids clean up after themselves? He mutters as he tries to enjoy the water that is now somehow too hot. He sits there feeling a sense of dread that in less than 1 hour, he will be sitting in an uncomfortable chair, pounding a keyboard and doing pointless work. Both men make their way to their closets. Man number one gazes at his many fine suits, beautiful shirts and collection of silk ties. He looks at the tie from last Sunday and smiles. He'd use the corner of his tie to wipe away a few pieces of a mushy baby snack from his baby boy's face. The tie almost seems more beautiful because of it. He picks a dark suit, a tailored French cuff shirt, and a tie that complements both. He selects a silk pocket square, slides on his expensive shoes, and takes a glance in the mirror as he thinks, not too bad. He's not required to wear a suit, but he loves the way it feels. And a little extra effort can't hurt anything. Man number two looks at his limited suit selection, his shirts that feel too familiar and old, and his ties, a few of which are slightly stained. He pushes those ties aside as he wonders why his wife insists on feeding the baby such messy food. He decides he's not going to wear a suit that day. I mean, who am I trying to impress, he thinks. He grabs a pair of khakis that seem a little tight and pulls a polo shirt over his head that seems to showcase a little too much of his growing belly. If I have to go to a crappy job, I at least deserve to be comfortable. Both men head to the kitchen. Knowing his family will be up soon, man number one prepares breakfast for them. He fixes a warm batch of oatmeal and leaves it on the stove for his kids. He sits down to enjoy his hot bowl of oats as he listens to a book on success principles. Man number two grabs a bowl of sugary cereal, trying to chew as quietly as possible so he doesn't wake up the kids and get forced into making their breakfast. Just as both men finish their breakfasts, the kids and wives come into the kitchen. Man number one greets his family and showers them with love, hugs, and kisses. He dishes up their oatmeal as he makes small talk about what they dreamed about and how they slept. He helps his wife by tidying up the kitchen and squeezes out a few extra minutes with his family before he leaves, hoping that the small things he did will make the day just a little easier for his wife. Man number two also greets his family with an obligatory yet enjoyable batch of hugs and kisses, but is immediately taken back by how loud the kids are talking. He tries to quiet them as he reluctantly gets bowls and pours cereal for them, hoping to move quickly so he can get out the door to his uncomfortable but quiet office. He tries to find an excuse why he's gotta leave right away. Both men grab their laptops, kiss their families goodbye, and walk to their cars. Man number one opens the door of his sporty sedan and fires up the engine. He pauses to reflect on the blessings of having a comfortable, working vehicle. He looks at the gas gauge. It's almost on empty, but he has plenty to get to work. He presses play on his latest audiobook on success to take advantage of the drive time. He pulls up his bank account.